Chapter 46, How Ma and Greencoat Shouted for Help in Ming Shui Fortress. The new moon ran its brief but radiant course. By the time it turned red and was about to disappear, Christian and Big Tiger were already an hour in the saddle. They rode westward along the caravan track at a trot. Since they had left Steep Rock Well, they rode below a continuous wall of cliffs. They felt as if they were alongside a town wall and could not see beyond. They only knew that it was the great, seemingly endless sea of boulders which stretched from north to south, farther and farther, faintly illuminated by the stars. When the Pleiades came out, Dampignac turned aside from the caravan road. Passing through a gap in the steep, rocky walls, he emerged onto the high plateau. Up there, he rode for a short way northward, then turned west again. He kept an eye on the rim of cliffs in order to keep the same distance from the caravan trail. They rode at a walk. Shortly before midnight, Dampignac dismounted. The plain had suddenly come to an end. They could hear the caravan bells and see far over the plain. Right in the middle, on a small hill, stood a square pile. From its square shape, they could guess that this was the old frontier fort of Ming Shui, with its high outer walls still intact. What lay behind them could not be seen. In the west, dimly lighted hills were visible, forming a boundary to the plain. Moonlight took the horses by the reins and gave them to Christian. "Hold them a moment," he said, in a low voice. Then he slung the stirrups across the saddles so they would not clank. "I'm going now," he said. Dampignac nodded. "Greet Captain Cao Chang," he said, "and tell him I'll be there at the appointed time." Moonlight went off with the horses. Christian and Big Tiger were feeling rather unhappy, and each of them was thinking the same thing. The bad business is beginning now. When the sound of the hoofs had died away, Dampignac beckoned them, and they went up to the edge of the cliffs and lay down on the ground. Below them ran the caravan road. A medley of noise came from the direction of Ming Shui, the roaring of camels, the shouts of the drivers, and in between, the hammering down of the tent pegs. Then the campfires flared up, but one could only see the reflections flickering up and down the hill and the fortress walls, for the three tents of Ma's caravan were facing south. The camp was not lively for long. The camels were unloaded and tied up. The men drank tea, and the fires went out one after another. When moonlight came back an hour later, all was quiet, and only the faint light of the stars illumined the fort. "What have you found out?" asked Dampignac. "Captain Cao Cheng sends you his respectful greetings, and he begs you, my prince, to honor him with a visit as soon as possible." "The poor fellow is positively on thorns," said Moonlight with a laugh. "And do you two know why he's so impatient?" he asked, turning to Christian and Big Tiger. "We can't think why," said Big Tiger. "Please enlighten us." "Why, you lads seem to know everything else," said Moonlight, "and this is quite simple. Captain Cao Cheng hopes to get a promotion when he is able to notify the old governor that he's found the two golden pheasants." "If that's so," said Dampignac, "we must hurry. In any case, it's best, for the man who's out early catches the tiger." They walked across the gravelly space on Moonlight's cautious direction, one behind the other. The dark ravine continued to their left, and it was only after a quarter of an hour's walk that Dampignac turned into it. A cool breeze blew up from it, and the darkness was no longer impenetrable. They could see rocks and stones, and finally a boulder-strewn slope, down which they wended their way cautiously to the valley. Despite all their care, stones loosened under their feet and noisily bounced downhill. The noise rejoiced the heart of Cao Chang, who came running eagerly to meet them, bending his knee in greeting when only halfway. He was wearing a black uniform with brass buttons. "Only 10 steps more," he called, and then, "Only 5," and finally, "Here we are." The encampment consisted merely of a few felt rugs on which Cao Chang's men squatted or lay in their sheepskins. They had no uniforms. The horses stood a little higher up, where it was wider, and there was a little desert grass. A guard was standing with them. After the salutations, Cao Chang said, "I have forbidden my men to light a fire because your presence, my prince, leads me to conclude that there's something special afoot." "Your prudence is praiseworthy, captain," Dampignac replied. "It will not be forgotten, and your men will be duly rewarded. How much longer will you be here?" "Another full week," said Cao Chang. "On the 6th evening, my messenger will bring you a small reward for your trouble." "You are much too kind, noble benefactor," cried Cao Chang, and his men added their approbation when told. They immediately became more cheerful and affable, gave up the best places, and fetched saddle covers as seats for the guests. "Behold the sons of princes Compass Mountain and Big Tiger," began Moonlight. "Their arrival will put you into favor with the old governor." Cao Chang was waiting for this. "May I send my messenger with the telegram to Tsing Tsing Ha?" he asked. "He's waiting." "Have patience," said Moonlight. "It's time enough tomorrow." Cao Chang's face dropped. "As you wish," he said. "The fact is," continued Moonlight, "that the lads have business here." "I thought as much," said Cao Chang. "People don't make a journey as long as that, just to be able to say, 'I've been here and there.' What do the young gentlemen want?" "We would like to visit the merchant Greencoat," said Christian. "We heard he had arrived in Tsing Tsing Ha." "Oh, what a shame," cried Cao Chang. "Greencoat drove on to Hami 4 days ago in a magnificent horseless car. He's doing great business." "To Hami?" asked Moonlight, taken aback. "Yes, definitely to Hami. The soldier Hu met him just beyond Tsing Tsing Ha, tearing along in his horseless car. The heavens darkened, but Hu raised his gun, for he's a brave soldier, and he wanted to show Greencoat we were watching the frontier. Greencoat stopped the car, and his Tsing Tsing Ha manager was sitting beside him. 'Don't you see that we're in a hurry?' shouted the manager. 'Hold your tongue,' said Greencoat. 'I'm very glad to see the frontier guards are keeping their eyes open.' 'Where are you going?' asked Hu, and Mr. Greencoat said, 'To Hami.' Hu was very much surprised and said, 'I venture to ask why the gentlemen are not going by the Silk Road, which is a good road, instead of through the middle of the desert, where the going is rough, and it's a big detour, besides.' 'I'll explain that,' said Mr. Greencoat, affably. 'We are driving this way, as we want to try out the northern route, and because there's much to learn. Besides, I've business in Tashbulak.' Then the gentleman drove on, and the heavens darkened again. The horseless car made a kind of earthquake, so to speak. Hu said the clatter was like the devil's bone mill. Moonlight began to curse, but the venerable chief stopped him. 'Now, now,' said Cao Chang, returning to the point, 'perhaps something can be done about it. If the young gentleman would like to send a telegram to Tsing Tsing Ha, that would be possible.' 'How does one get from here to Tsing Tsing Ha?' asked Christian. 'It's not far at all,' Cao Chang assured him cheerfully. 2 days' ride, and you're there. Formerly, it was much quicker.' 'How was that?' asked Big Tiger. 'In those days, there was a direct route by Falling Wall,' said Cao Chang, 'and a fine route it was. All the caravans going north used it, and the ones coming down from the north rested there. It has a real stream, at least 300 feet or longer, and there's grass and trees and a wall of rock as high as the heavens with caves in it. You needed no tents at Falling Wall. You just went into the caves, and it was fine and warm. That's what Falling Wall used to be like. And what is it like now? Asked Christian. Did something happen at Falling Wall? Yes, something happened, but it's a long time ago, and we needn't speak about it, said Cao Chang. Speak, Captain, said Dampignac. We've got time. It's an honor to tell the story, though I was not there, said Cao Chang, bowing. If I'd been there, I wouldn't be here now. 10 winters ago, a caravan was camping at Falling Wall, and East Wind was blowing the smoke into the caves, so the men made a big fire in the open and sat around it, eating their meal. Probably a fine meal, too, for the caravan was on government business. Whether it was day or night, nobody knows, but suddenly there was a frightful peal of thunder and the wall of rock caved in. Up till then, the place was called Blessed Shelter, but that was soon over. The caravan lay crushed flat as rice paper. All the dogs and the 10 soldiers lay dead, and the 6 camel drivers were killed, too. Except one, interrupted Moonlight. How do you know that? Asked Cao Chang. There must have been one to tell the story, otherwise you wouldn't know it. That's true, said Cao Chang, abashed. But it's better not to mention the survivor at once. Anyhow, he was only a boy. He was at the stream when it happened, and he fell into the water, and the clothes froze on his body. The poor creature lost his mind, all but a glimmer. He caught a camel that was running away, and he rode, nobody knows how, as far as Tsing Tsing Ha. There he told that the heavens had fallen on Blessed Shelter, and that all the men and dogs were dead, and most of the camels. There had been some snow, too, continued Cao Chang, and when people came to the place 5 days later, they found only the caved-in rock, and here and there a bit of an arm or a crushed dog. The frontier captain, it was another man in those days, noticed at once that it had been a rich caravan. What a pity, he cried. At that moment, more rocks fell, and it was just plain luck they escaped. They ran without stopping north, south, east, and west, and when they'd assembled again, they rode home. Since then, the place has been called Falling Wall. And the camels? Asked Christian. And the loads? Asked Big Tiger. What happened to them? That's just it, replied Cao Chang. They found nothing. But later, a few brave fellows, real tigers of courage, went to Falling Wall, and as it was known that the caravans were carrying silver bars to the mint in Peking, they thought they'd pick up something. Naturally, there were officials among them, grand gentlemen from Peking. They sighed over the many dead whom they couldn't see, and the silver which they couldn't find. Their few sighs brought the stones, big and little, tumbling down again, and they ran for their lives. Now the place lies deserted, and no more caravans come from the north road to Tsing Tsing Ha, for the new road is difficult and takes 2 days instead of 1.5. With horses, I mean. By camel, it's longer. Aha, said Moonlight. So that was before our time. Yes, it was before you gentlemen honored our neighborhood, Cao Chang admitted politely. Such a thing would hardly have happened otherwise. "Would you permit us to view Falling Wall tomorrow, Captain?" asked Dampignac. "In my company, of course," replied Cao Chang eagerly. "It is, so to speak, a necessary honor for me." "A good idea, that, Captain," said Moonlight, giving him a friendly slap on the shoulder. "Is it?" asked Cao Chang, dubious but cheerful. "You'll soon be a colonel," said Moonlight, "and all these fellows will be non-commissioned officers." When Cao Chang repeated this to his men, they forgot they were freezing cold. One of them stood up and fetched a big brass can, and as they could not warm it, the men drank the brandy cold. Moonlight also drank some, for politeness' sake. But he said, "The young gentlemen are unused to drinking. They want to sleep." Christian began to yawn, and Big Tiger helped him. Moonlight took them behind a jutting rock. "Let's sleep," he said. But Tongat suddenly appeared again and wanted to pass his news to Cao Cheng. "You see, we're already here," said Moonlight. "When Ma goes on tomorrow, you shall remain with Bank until we fetch you." "I shall do as you command," replied Tongat, and disappeared. It was a good hour before Cao Cheng and his five men were asleep. The man who was guarding the horses was the first to drop off, but Damping Yak remained awake. He signaled to Moonlight, whereupon Moonlight pulled off his boots, and Christian and Big Tiger did the same. They all tied the boots to their whips and carried them over their shoulders. Step by step, they crept down the valley with its rocky stream until they were sufficiently far away. "Have you noticed anything?" whispered Moonlight as they put on their boots again. "Yes, we have noticed something, honored sir." They went a few steps farther over the gravelly stream bed until Moonlight, despite the darkness, made out where they were. The valley bent sharply southward, and now they were on a good straight road alongside the wall of rock on the right. There were no more stones, either. "We're on the caravan road," said Moonlight, and Christian and Big Tiger noticed that, too. The valley grew wider and suddenly ended. They stood at the foot of the stony slope on which they had lain with the venerable chief, looking toward Ming Shui, when Ma's caravan came and struck camp there. "Listen to me, sons of heroes," said Moonlight. "What shall we do now? We must do something." "What about looking around a bit?" suggested Christian. "Yes, we'll do that," said Moonlight. "Compass Mountain thinks we should examine the fortress," said Big Tiger. "We could look down into the camp from up there and see whether anyone is coming. Ma is to meet Greencoat there on business early tomorrow morning," Christian recalled. "The business concerns old jewelry," added Big Tiger. "What's that you're saying?" shouted Moonlight excitedly. "Not so loud," begged Christian. "Mr. Ma only mentioned that by chance, and more we do not know." "But I know more," said Moonlight, gnashing his teeth. He looked wild and distraught in the darkness. After a moment's thought, he continued, "I know the fortress, and it has only one entrance, only one real one, and that's the gateway in the south. If you go in there, you see everything that's going on. There are heaps of clay bricks, which once were houses, and around the lock there's a wall with battlements, and that's all. You can sit down anywhere, and from any point you can see the whole place, for the fortress is small." "You think," said Big Tiger, "that it would not be wise to go in the gateway, as there might be someone inside, sitting on a heap of ruins, who would be surprised to see us." "Yes, that's what I thought," Moonlight admitted. "But there's no other way. We must wait for daylight." "What about the entrance that's not a real one?" asked Christian. "Oh, yes," said Moonlight. "You mean the water gate." "If there's a water gate," said Christian, "that's what we mean." "There is a water gate," explained Moonlight, "but it's half choked with earth and sand. It was never big, and now it's probably a mere mouse hole, or shut up altogether. That happens quickly in the desert." "We'd like to look at it," said Christian. "At which side is it?" asked Big Tiger, who was all for exactitude. "Yabona," Moonlight replied by way of answer, stepping out resolutely. The hills, which formed a boundary to the plain in the west, were small. They looked like round molehills. Farther on, they got bigger and higher, and finally became mountains. But one could not see the mountains, for it was night, and Moonlight merely slipped along behind the first row of molehills. When he arrived opposite the fort of Ming Shui, he stopped, and then stepped cautiously out to the edge of the level space. Between it and the chain of hills ran a broad strip of water-worn stones, the empty bed of the little river which once flowed from the valley of the stony stream. Into it ran a deep, dry ditch, which came in a straight line from the dark fortress. Moonlight crossed the riverbed with rapid strides, and when he reached the ditch, he beckoned Christian and Big Tiger.
"This ditch leads directly to the water gate," he whispered.
At first, he was able to walk upright, and Christian and Big Tiger couldn't see over the sides, though they were crumbled in many places. But soon, Moonlight had to bend down in order not to be seen by anyone coming the way. Finally, bending down was not enough, and they had to crawl on all fours up to the fortress wall. The old ditch had become a silted-up channel here, and it ran steeply up the hill on which the fort stood. The walls of the fort were made of clay bricks, like the walls of Etsina. They were plastered, high as a tower, and very thick. Christian and Big Tiger noticed this when they got to the water gate. It was a dark hole, and they saw that by bending down, they could get into it. Inside, it was like a sentry box. Big Tiger ran his hand along the roof and at once felt the holes in which the iron bars of a grating had once been. They must have been nearly as thick as a man's arm and have stood quite close together. An enemy could hardly have got his hand through. But iron bars are precious things, and for this reason they were gone long ago.
"I'm very sorry," said Moonlight. "You'll have to go through alone. I might go a little way, but then I'd get stuck. I'm too big."
Christian and Big Tiger looked at the dark hole in the back wall. They felt the crumbling clay bricks of the ceiling and side walls. On the bottom lay blown in sand.
"Let's try if we can get through this passage into the fort," said Christian.
"Yes, let's try," said Big Tiger.
They took off their beautiful Mongolian coats and hats. Moonlight sat down under the water gate and looked out into the night. Over there was a labyrinth of little hills, behind them the bigger ones, but the mountains were still invisible. They were far away and shrouded in darkness. Between the hilly region and the fortress lay the narrow strip of level ground, shimmering in the starlight. The sanded-up ditch through which they had crawled ran like a rope across it. Moonlight could hear the work starting behind his back. Christian was the first to creep into the dark passage, which slanted upward. With both hands, he threw the sand behind him between his legs, and Big Tiger, in turn, threw it behind him.
"Can you make it or not?" asked Moonlight.
"Up to now, it's possible," Christian's muffled voice replied, "but the passage is getting narrower, and I see nothing but darkness in front of me."
"Hi, Compass Mountain," cried Moonlight suddenly.
"If that's the case, you had better take the whip and poke along in front of you in case there's anything ahead."
"What would there be?" asked Big Tiger.
"There might be a fox, for instance," said Moonlight. Big Tiger crawled quickly after Christian and passed him the whip. "Moonlight sends you this," he said, "in case you meet a fox."
"No fear of that," said Christian. "Wherever there's a foxhole, there's a stink, and it doesn't stink here."
"What did he say?" asked Moonlight, when Big Tiger came back with another load of sand.
"There's no stink of foxes," Big Tiger explained.
"All the same, he should watch out," said Moonlight, and Big Tiger crawled back and warned Christian.
"There's something in the way," said Christian, "and it won't move."
"Perhaps it's a stone," said Big Tiger.
"It's not a stone," replied Christian,
"or perhaps it is." He took the bamboo-handled whip and poked with all his strength against the obstacle. Suddenly, there was a dull, rumbling sound. Clay bricks fell from the roof, and a thick cloud of dust filled the passage.
"What is it?" cried Moonlight in alarm, when the cloud of dust welled forth from the hole.
Big Tiger couldn't answer, much less could Christian, who could only wag his legs, for he lay under a heap of clay bricks and couldn't get a breath of air. Big Tiger grabbed the wriggling legs, but only Christian's boots remained in his hands. He went hot and cold with terror. Throwing the boots aside, he once again grabbed the legs and pulled with all his might. His heart was in his mouth, and he propped himself against the wall of the shaft. He was at the end of his tether and couldn't get his breath. "In 2 minutes," he thought despairingly, "we two shall have to die together, far from our homes." But then he suddenly felt someone pulling off his boots.
"Hold on!" shouted Moonlight, but his voice seemed only a whisper, so thick was the air. He gripped Big Tiger's ankles grimly, and immediately he felt himself being pulled along. The pulling hurt. Suddenly there was a jerk, then another, and then he was dragged through the hole with Christian after him, for he hadn't let go of him. To his joy, he felt a breeze of fresh air. Moonlight was kneeling beside him. "Let go," said Moonlight roughly, and Big Tiger opened his clutching fingers. For a while, he just lay there. Then he realized what had happened, and he felt his way through the darkness to the exit. There sat Moonlight, holding Christian on his lap. He was wiping the dust from his mouth, and Christian was breathing and opening his eyes. "Don't be cross," begged Big Tiger. "Who says I'm cross?" snapped Moonlight. "I'd like to hug you both." He drew Big Tiger up to the edge of the water gate, and there they sat until their hearts quieted down. And Moonlight said, "That happens because man is a poor mortal thing. No more creeping under the earth." "I believe," Big Tiger objected timidly, "that the passage is now free. I felt a draft of air."
"Draft of air or not," said Moonlight solemnly, "you'll stay here now." For a while, no one said anything. Then Big Tiger began again. "Perseverance brings success," he murmured to himself. And then, "by marching forward, the right place is reached." "What's he mumbling?" asked Moonlight. "It's his grandfather who's mumbling," declared Christian. "He's got a grandfather who deserves to be heeded, for he's a wise man." "Would your grandfather want you to crawl under the ground and lose your breath?"
"I don't mean that," explained Big Tiger, "but one should leave nothing untried because there's such a thing as sticking it out."
"I see," said Moonlight, "that you're quite incorrigible. But this time," he said, "I'll creep in as far as I can go." Christian and Big Tiger wouldn't hear of that. Someone might come at any moment, they said, and it was necessary to keep watch. Moonlight gave way. "You're right," he said. "That's what we're here for." He took his stand at the water gate again, and Big Tiger said softly, "Until now, we two have done everything together, Kwee-chan."
"And we'll go on doing so," replied Christian. And because he knew what Big Tiger meant, he let him take the lead without opposition. First, Big Tiger got their boots out of the passage, and Christian put them out where Moonlight was sitting. "How are you feeling?" inquired Moonlight anxiously.
"I'll be careful," promised Christian, and he quickly crawled back into the passage, in which Big Tiger was stuck like a prop, busily scratching. Christian waited for Big Tiger to push out sand and rubble, but Big Tiger did nothing of the kind.
"Is there a stoppage?" cried Christian, alarmed. Instead of an answer, he got a kick in the face, for Big Tiger had slid forward. From this, Christian perceived that they were making headway. Big Tiger was moving ahead. Where he had broken through, there was a heap of loose clay, sand, and rubble. But Big Tiger noticed a draft, and high above him, he could see a little bit of sky and a star. "It's a long way back," thought Big Tiger, and he began to push away the obstruction in front of him. It was easier than he had expected. He dug his feet into the ground for a final effort and was getting through. He crawled over the rubble and found himself in a kind of cave, like the one in which Moonlight was sitting, only that it was half filled with rubble at the farther end and had no free exit. There was just the little bit of sky and the star.
"Hello," Christian called gently.
"Hello," Big Tiger called back and made room for Christian, who had just crept in through the passage.
"Where are you?" asked Christian. "Have you found that out?"
"Not quite yet, but we've got through under the wall. I'll tell Moonlight." Together they cleared the entrance to the passage, and then Big Tiger disappeared to tell Moonlight they had got through. Christian looked around him. There was not much to see. The cave was just like the other one. In the roof there were holes for iron bars, which had disappeared, and apparently one could have walked out of it on the level if the exit had not been blocked with a heap of rubble.
Christian climbed up on this loose pile of broken clay bricks, slate, and wood, and stuck his head into the open. He craned his neck, but could see nothing more than a high heap of ruins to the right, of which this pile of rubble, on which he was sitting, was the lowest spur, so to speak, and to the left, the dark wall of the fortress. The sky was full of stars, and it was still night. Christian strained his ears, but all was silent. At first he thought of pushing the rubble aside and creeping on all fours into the open, but he was doubtful whether Big Tiger would approve, so he drew in his head, slid down the heap of rubble until he reached the entry to the underground passage again, and waited there. It was a weary wait. Sometimes he imagined he heard Big Tiger speaking or an excited whisper from Moonlight, but then all was silent again. Some minutes passed, and Christian wondered whether he should crawl through the passage again to find out what was up. But he realized in time that Big Tiger would probably be crawling along too, and their heads would bang together in the middle of the passage, and neither would be able to move forward, and would find it very hard to crawl backward. Suddenly, the waiting came to an end. Christian could hear the boots being pushed aside. He could also hear Moonlight cursing and Big Tiger pleading in an earnest whisper, "Please, please, not now." Moonlight growled, and then Big Tiger left him and came crawling back. Christian had no need to ask what's up, for Big Tiger's head had scarcely emerged from the subterranean passage than he said, "It's frightful, Gwee-chan. He's there." "Greencoat?" asked Christian. "Yes, on a donkey, carrying something behind him." He crawled out of the narrow passage and sat down beside Christian on the floor of the cave. "Were you outside?" he whispered. "No," said Christian. "I wanted to wait for you." Big Tiger gave a sigh of relief. "That means there are no traces of us outside," he said. "Nowhere," said Christian. "But you must peep out and see what's there, and we must think what to do next." Big Tiger climbed up on the heap of rubble and craned out. When he came back, he whispered, "It can't be helped. We can't make any move." "Tell me about Greencoat," asked Christian. "When I got back to Moonlight, he was listening hard and put his finger on his mouth. Then I listened too, and I heard the trot of an ass. First it was far away, then it came nearer, and then suddenly there was someone crossing the open space just near the ditch through which we crawled. Down there, where the fortress hill begins, he turned the donkey, and Moonlight began to tremble because it was Greencoat. Greencoat rode round the fort, and it seems he must have come into it by the gateway to the south, because if he'd gone down to Ma's camp, we'd hear the dogs barking by now." "Did Moonlight want to shoot?" asked Christian. "He was dying to shoot," replied Big Tiger. "He said no more, but put his hand over Christian's mouth, for small stones and bits of clay brick began rolling down the mound of ruins outside, and a little sand came like a spray of dust into the cave." "You or I," whispered Christian into Big Tiger's ear. "You," Big Tiger answered. "No, you're cleverer," whispered Christian. At this, Big Tiger crawled up the slope of rubble once more, but this time so slowly and cautiously that Christian lost patience and began crawling after him. At last, Big Tiger was up, and Christian watched him pushing his head inch by inch through the opening. That lasted a frightful time, but scarcely had Big Tiger peeped out than he withdrew his head quick as lightning. Again, some stones rolled down the slope of rubble, and a cloud of dust shut out the view. When the dust cleared, Christian saw that Big Tiger had his finger to his lips, and then he held his clenched fist to his nose. It was hard to understand what he meant, but suddenly it became clear. Big Tiger put out first his thumb, then his first finger. "Two," thought Christian. "That means Ma's arrived, and now they're sitting on the mound of ruins. And if we're lucky..." "So there you are," they heard Greencoat say without any formal greeting. His voice was gruff as usual, and though he was a good way off and speaking in an undertone, they could understand most of what he was saying and imagine the rest. "I've been waiting here on the wall half an hour," replied Ma in an injured tone, "and it wasn't very pleasant." "Nonsense," growled Greencoat. "Things keep falling down all the time," said Ma, "and it's quite unnerving. This is an uncanny place." "I know that," snarled Greencoat, "but let's get down to brass tacks. Here's the jewel casket." "I've considered the matter," said Ma, "and 4,000 is too much." 4,000 is too little, you mangy pickpocket. 3,500 and no more. 4,000. "Impossible," wailed Ma. "What if I can't dispose of the stuff?" "Your own stupidity would be to blame. I tell you how you'll do it. Kucheng is naturally no place for such goods. You must take them to Peking with you. If you're clever, you'll get double the money from a foreigner there." "Why don't you do this business yourself, then?" asked Ma, eyeing him slyly. "Stupid devil," cried Greencoat, louder than he meant to. He stood up, as Big Tiger noted from the dribble of sand. "I wanted to throw a good deal your way," he continued hoarsely, "but I see my kindness is wasted on one who is unworthy of it." "Don't be excitable, old gentleman. Now let's say 3,500, and here's my note. Li Wan Pei can cash it right away." "You mangy tramp," snarled Greencoat. "You seem to think I'm a half-wit. I've given you the list of the stuff and the weight. It's all pure gold." "May I have a look?" asked Ma politely. For a minute there was silence. Then they thought they heard the sliding cover of a wooden casket creaking, and a gasp of admiration escaped Ma. "Now you see, little friend. So out with the other 500." "Why that?" asked Ma insolently. The sliding cover creaked again, and Christian and Big Tiger heard Greencoat saying angrily, "You old scoundrel, you won't get away like that." "All right," replied Ma scornfully, "but first I must convey to you 10,000 greetings and sincere wishes for your welfare." "From some bandits like yourself?" "No, from the two young gentlemen, Compass Mountain and Big Tiger." "Son of a dog!" shouted Greencoat. "Give me back that casket!" "You have my note, and I've got the casket. Our business is concluded." Ma had not finished speaking when the blow of a fist right in the face sent him reeling. He rolled down the pile of rubble, and the casket with him. Christian and Big Tiger could hear the stones tumbling down and the dull thuds of Mr. Ma rolling over and over. The peephole of their cave darkened, and Big Tiger slid down the rubble to the ground, to where the subterranean passage began. "Ooh," he wailed, "my shoulder!" Christian was just about to slide down after him when he saw before him the object which had fallen through the peephole and hit Big Tiger. It was a wooden box, about the size of a box of 100 cigars. Christian picked it up. It was heavy. "Let's go," he whispered to Big Tiger. "We must get out as fast as we can. I've got the box." "What box?" asked Big Tiger, still slightly stunned. But then he understood, quick as lightning, for outside a piercing yell resounded. "Help! Murder! Help!" It was Mr. Ma. Once more sand and stones dropped through the peephole. As Big Tiger crept into the passageway, the hole closed up completely, and it became pitch dark. Christian could see nothing at all. Where the hole had been, someone was stamping and struggling, and that was Greencoat, who had run after Ma and was at the same time looking for the casket. But although he had fallen through the hole only up to his knees and was apparently uninjured, he was roaring just as loudly as Ma. He was thoroughly terrified, perhaps also because Christian had given him a fierce bite in the bare calf before fleeing into the passage. After Big Tiger, he pushed the casket carefully before him. Moonlight was waiting for them outside. He had heard Ma and then Greencoat shouting for help, but now all was silent as before. Big Tiger put his finger to his lips imploringly. "Have patience for 2 minutes," he whispered to Moonlight, and then he asked him to sit down in his old place.
He and Christian pulled on their boots, put their coats round their shoulders, and sat down beside him.
"Your 2 minutes are very long," muttered Moonlight.
"Hush," said Christian, and "hush," said Big Tiger, whenever he wanted to speak.
They knew well why it took so long. Apparently Greencoat was still crawling around in the rubble looking for the casket and raging because he couldn't find it anywhere and because he dared not venture into the cave full of wild beasts that bit. Only when the edge of the night sky was touched with the gray of dawn and the stars were fading, but it was still so dark that a rider could cross the plain without being really visible, Christian and Big Tiger heard the trot of an ass. They quickly held Moonlight's arms as he tried to grab his pistol, but their precaution was unnecessary, for this time Greencoat did not ride past the water gate. No sooner had he emerged from behind the fortress wall than he made straight for the hills in the west and disappeared.
"There goes the beast," said Moonlight grimly. "Come, let's mount our horses."
"In hurry there is error," said Big Tiger thoughtfully, rubbing his sore shoulder.
"Have you got something to say?" inquired Moonlight impatiently. "We should speak of Big Tiger's grandfather," said Christian. "Is that the one who said, 'By marching forward the right place is reached?" asked Moonlight.
"Yes, that's the one," said Christian.
"We did, in fact, find the right place," said Big Tiger, "and something fell down on my shoulder and hurt me."
"It's made of wood," said Christian, "and we've brought it back with us because it's wrong to despise anything." He laid the casket with its slide cover in Moonlight's lap. Moonlight's arms dropped and his hands trembled.
"Perhaps," said Big Tiger, "you should look and see what's in it."
"I do not dare," said Moonlight.
"Permit me," said Christian, and he slid back the cover. It crunched, but that was because of the sand, which now fell on the gold and the pearl necklaces which filled the box. On top lay a coronet with a circle of small turquoises and a big one in the middle. Beside it were two little lockets, like the one Dombit wore on his breast, but they were made of pure gold, studded with pearls. Underneath were bracelets, rings, and chains, all of pure gold. Christian and Big Tiger gazed at the treasure, and they felt like Ma, who could not suppress his breathless admiration, seeing them even in the dark. But now there was a little pale shimmer of dawn. Christian looked up at Moonlight to see what he would say, but Moonlight had tears in his eyes. They ran down his furrowed cheeks and dropped into the casket, onto the gold and the turquoises. He slid back the cover. 20 years ago, he said, the young princess wore that circlet, and she was lovely and gentle. He drew his hand across his eyes. Then suddenly his eyes hardened, and he cried, "Up, up, to our horses!" Christian and Big Tiger pulled on their coats. Then they left the water gate and ran down the hill and into the ditch, where this time they walked boldly upright. It was bright in the east, but the square fort of Ming Shui, where once there had been so much water that they needed a water gate and a conduit, was still shrouded in darkness. Moonlight carried the jewel casket under his arm. As they went up the valley of the stony stream, the venerable chief came toward them all alone. Moonlight knelt down and raised the casket to his forehead, but one could see from his twitching shoulders that he was unable to speak because tears had overcome him again. He held the casket up for a long time until Dampignac took it from his hands. The eyes of the venerable chief grew dark and troubled. They wandered from the casket to Moonlight and from Moonlight to Christian and Big Tiger, who also saluted him with a kowtow. "It was not I," cried Moonlight, sobbing. "It was they. They crawled under the earth, and their breath left them."
"Little paw," said Dampignac solemnly, handing him back the casket, "the turning point has come." He lifted Christian and Big Tiger up and embraced them in silence.
Afterwards, as they walked down the valley and could already see Cao Cheng and his men, who had lit a fire at break of day and were drinking tea, the venerable chief said quietly to Christian and Big Tiger, "Forgive me, but I cannot thank you. Words are such poor, empty sounds."